Hello and welcome to Sounds Right, a new improvised comedy show where two guests will be making up scenes and games on the spot based on audience suggestions. Sounds Right takes an alternative look at the things which matter to Lush and those of us who lead a Lush life.
Welcome to Sounds Right, a sideways glance at a Lush life with your host, Luke Sorba, and special guest, Pippa Evans.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. My name's Luke Sorba. To my left is my special guest, Pippa Evans. And in front of us is a bowl full of pieces of paper. Now, on those pieces of paper, you have written down topics, themes and ideas that all relate to Lush life. And I can assure you that neither Pippa nor myself know what's in there. We haven't prepared a thing. We're going to start pulling out the pieces of paper. And when we do, we will read out what we find and then have a bit of a chat about it and occasionally break off into an improvised comedy game that explores that theme a little bit further before returning to a bit of chat and so on until it's over. Let's see what the first piece of paper says. So, shall I? Oh, do you want to pull it out?
Yes, I'd love to pull out a suggestion. The first suggestion we have is self-care.
Self-care is our theme.
Great.
So we will just start with our first thoughts on self-care. Pippa, you have a self.
I do have a self.
All people have a self.
Well, yeah, I think so. So self-care is quite interesting, isn't it? Because sometimes self-care is considered a glass of Prosecco in the bath.
Or a bath of Prosecco. Depending on what day you've had.
The instant bubble bath is a bath yes, filled with Prosecco.
It is, yeah.
And if you put a Lush bath bomb in, available in all good Lush stores, imagine putting a Lush bath bomb in a Prosecco bath. You've got to do that one day.
It's like having cake with cake.
Yeah. Well, yeah, double cake.
Double cake.
But with extra baking powder in it.
And ganache. Did I say that right?
Ganache.
My favourite part of the cake is the kind of creamy layers in between the... I don't bake, by the way. Have I said it right? Eating cake is self-care. Treating ourselves.
Treating.
Not everything has to be social media.
I am Pippa Evans.
Perhaps self-care would involve switching off social media.
Yes.
Because social and self are...
Yes,
opposites.
Because self-care is about looking into yourself rather than out to the world, perhaps. Self-care is about ignoring what the world is saying to you and perhaps instead listening to what you were saying to you. What's your own narrative rather than the narrative that you're being forced to live?
I'm still in that bath eating
cake. Yeah.
But I've heard you in the other room and I've climbed out and said, oh, that's very interesting. Maybe it's time to hear a pitch from the Self-Care Society.
Oh, yes, the Self-Care Society
are
here. Which
has only one member.
Yes.
In order to be a self-care society.
Yes, absolutely.
Rather than looking after everyone. Because the more people you have, the more other people you have to look after.
That's right. There's only one person in the Self-Care Society, and they are here today. Thank you so much for coming.
But they're going to be played by two people, so we'll hear what they have to say with the actors speaking one word at a time.
Hello.
Welcome
to
my
home,
which
is
in
Bromley,
Kent.
Bromley,
Kent.
That's
where
my
home
is.
I
live
alone
because
I'm
like
this.
This
is
what
I
am
so
very
much
like
this.
Self
care
can
hurt
because
it
is.
Always
painful.
Looking
inside
my
heart,
I
can
find
pain
and
sorrow
on
many
levels.
Relationships,
physically,
mentally,
radiophonically,
judgmentally.
That's
how
I
roll.
In
life.
One
must
obey
the
mother
nature,
which
commands
me
to
look
at
the
innermost secrets
of
my
neighbours.
Beryl
next
door
is
naughty
with
bananas.
Roger
enjoys
alone
time.
Max
breaks
down
and
cries
regularly.
Sophie
Dahl
is
alive.
All
these
things
are
true.
So
look
into
my
soul
and
see
the
truth
in
yours.
Well, that was very illuminating. This person seems to look after themselves while at the same time spending a lot of time looking at other people. Maybe the way to look after oneself is actually to spend less time looking at oneself.
Well, that's true.
And more time,
You can get stuck in your own, you can get sort of obsessed with your self-care, can't you? You can get stuck in worrying about reflecting on your self-care so much that you start obsessing about it. So maybe actually to look in is to look out. As RuPaul says, we all know, if you can't love yourself, how in the hell are you going to love somebody else? There's a lot of truth in that. In fact, many people would say that it's the most modern translation of the Buddhist idea of loving kindness meditation.
Yeah. Not that many people would say that.
I would say a lot of people, particularly those
many?
Who perhaps watch Netflix.
I'm going to ask for a hands up if you have ever said that's the most modern translation of the Buddhist philosophy.
Thank you. That's pretty good. In a room of thousands.
No, that's quite good. And I will now say, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it's a very powerful.
No, it's a paradox, and it's a very good point. So, what are the forms of self-care? So, self-care maybe is not worrying so much about knowing yourself, and spend more time just accepting being yourself.
Being in the moment.
And not judging how you look after yourself.
Yeah, not and measuring yourself against other people's achievements, but running your own path, following your own field.
I saw some kind of billboard that had it had something like don't compare yourself to who you want to be. And then I walked past the billboard and I never got to read the other half. The wise
so
affirmation.
Who you should compare yourself to.
Well, I'm wondering whether we could just imagine what was the second half of that.
Seriously, say the first half again.
It was don't compare yourself with who you want to be.
Oh, compare yourself with who you could have been if you hadn't done all those bad things.
Maybe it said that. I was saying compare yourself to your older sibling.
Yeah.
That can happen.
Compare yourself.
My brother's done very well for himself.
Has he?
Yeah, he owns his own home.
Oh yeah.
Cycles.
all the
he's
got the
all,
modern.
He's got all his own hair.
Oh Luke, I feel like this is turning into a sort of counselling session.
I think it began.
Say the beginning of the sentence again.
Don't compare yourself with who you wanted to be. I was thinking on the lines that it might have said, compare yourself with who you were yesterday.
Oh yeah, probably yeah. Compare yourself with who your teachers said you'd be. And then say,
were
up
you
yours, teachers, yes. You fools.
Were you encouraged at school to feel you could be? Because
I was told I would be the next prime minister.
I'm sure you were, because you were head girl.
I was a girl. But also, I think they probably told that to all the girls, which means there are sort of thousands of women going around going, my teacher said I should be the next prime minister and I haven't achieved it. But we can't all be the prime minister, can we? So and who would want
we
to
could.
Be, quite frankly?
We could. We could rota it rather than have elections.
Oh, my God. Have you ever seen a rota actually work? Have you ever, when you put a rota in your house to say, hey, let's do a rota of shared flatmates to do the cleaning? It's never worked. Imagine how many people go, oh, sorry, I forgot to be the Prime Minister today. So, do you mind being the Prime Minister? It's just I've got a really hot date.
I guess, no, I haven't. But
have you ever lived in a shared house?
Yes.
It's very hard to do
with my family. I do everything, so we don't have a rota.
It's hard to do self-care if you're in a shared house. Maybe it's harder because, especially if a family, that must be harder to have self-care.
Well, who
time.
Do you put first is the question.
Well, exactly,
so when you have a family, there's an expectation, particularly if you're a parent, that you never put yourself first. And I think that's part of the pressure that parents feel. They feel guilty when they look after themselves and then overwhelmed if they don't look after themselves. But this is something I feel with teachers and social workers and other carers who are told you must put your patient or the school child first. That if you don't look after yourself, you can't look after other people. An endless sacrifice does not make someone the best carer or teacher or social worker or therapist.
Which is, it comes back to the oxygen mask on a plane. Where
did you
says,
say the Oscar?
I did start saying the Oscar because I was thinking about what I really want to achieve in life.
Did your teacher say one day you're going to get the Oscar?
Have an Oscar and be the Prime Minister. No one's done that. No one's ever combined those two.
Oh, but that's true.
But the Oscar...
Ronald Reagan... No,
oh,
sorry.
No. Did he get an he might have got
no,
an
he never got an Oscar. Oh, okay. He was an equally bad actor as he was a president.
But
you were saying
first.
Before
you interrupted me, like how men do, right, ladies? the oxygen mask falls down on a plane, and it says, attend to your mask first before you attend to your child.
Exactly.
So that you need to be well to look after mask. But we've often forget the second part of that sentence, I think, sometimes as well. You could argue we've gone too far with self-care, and people have become so obsessed with self-care that they forget that the purpose of self-care is that you are then able to serve your community.
Yeah.
Do we want to pick another one?
Mm. I had loads more
that
to
was,
say.
It was quite a leading question, really, wasn't it? But
refugees.
Oh, yeah. Lots of fun there. Refugees. Refugees.
Mm.
I've always wondered if... I always think about how during the kinder transport, everyone had to take in a child. You know, a lot of people were told you're going to take a child in. And I wondered why it's so hard for us to do that now. Why are we more selfish? Like why we find it harder?
Well, if
space,
I
space obviously, but
well, yeah,
but also
yeah.
fear and the major.
But it's a choice that we make. So last week I got on the train and I did take a child. And I got into a hell of a lot of trouble.
Yeah. You just wanted to give them a good home.
Yeah.
Good education.
I needed someone to help me with my bags because I couldn't carry them all. Up the stairs, and I thought the child would benefit.
Do you think it would help if we stopped saying refugee crisis? Because I think the word crisis makes everyone panic. Instead, we said refugee influx or refugee.
Refugee influx sounds like
refugee
a digestive.
Come and get yourself a refugee. This is probably really tasteless. So I'm just finding a way that people feel less like threatened by refugees and more like, oh, it's just some people that really need some help.
Well, if you remember what the word comes from, it's about providing a refuge.
Mm.
It's providing a nest. It's providing a home.
Yeah.
So when did that become something to be fearful of?
Well, I reckon it's because we don't have time at home anymore. So you feel like you wouldn't be able to give them a refuge. It'd be like, you can sleep there. Now I won't see you all day because I'm going to work.
Well, it does dovetail into self-care. So if we do get too much into looking after ourselves, we feel that anyone else that comes along that needs looking after is sort of getting in our way.
Yeah,
and that natural instinct that we do. And it is a natural instinct to look after others because after all, we exist in nuclear or extended families. It's about, I don't think there's anything in people that makes them not want to look after those in need. I think it's just a case of people feeling overwhelmed that there's so much they've got to kind of deal with now that if something from, quote unquote, the outside turns up, that is simply, that's an overload. So I think the thing about refugees, it's about defining what is the outside. So where is our family? Where does it stop? Who am I responsible for looking after? Like my parents are from they're from Italia, so I already feel part of a larger sort of group of people than maybe others who've sort of not moved about in their in their family history. So for me, it's about learning, it's about feeling member of like the human community, the international community, and then I think we wouldn't feel it's a burden to look after those that have slightly different names spelt slightly differently or. Different addresses.
My mum's from Portugal, but she's English, born in Portugal, and there's always a can of worms conversation about whether she's English or Portuguese, because she's technically Portuguese, but she's born English. So she's an English person born in Portugal, but on paper she's Portuguese. So there's a whole, so actually what does it mean to be English? What does it mean to be Portuguese, really?
Interestingly, the Portuguese, they were the first international explorers. Henry the Navigator He really pioneered.
Henry the Navigator.
Henry the Navigator. Well, if you're called Henry the Navigator, you're likely to be an explorer, aren't
doesn't,
you?
He doesn't sound very Portuguese, though, does he? Henry the Navigator. It sounds like a children's character from a book. Henry the Navigator.
He was actually christened Henry the Navigator. Henry the
because
Navigator.
He was from Mexico.
He was from Portugal, Mexico. The Portuguese accent is impossible because it's like listening to a Russian speaking Spanish.
Yeah, it's like Spanish. It's mountain Spanish, essentially.
It's mountain Spanish.
Yeah, because it's all back in the back of your throat.
Is it because there's less...
My name is Henry the Navigator. Well,
that's very Portuguese.
Thank you. It's because my mother is Portuguese. My mom sounds like the Queen, so she says things like, I don't know how you say it in English, but in Portuguese, it's... Great. Like, wow. And also, because she moved here in like the 60s, she speaks 1950s Portuguese. So when she goes back to Portugal, it's literally like Henry Chumley Warner going. So she goes back there and she's essentially saying in Portuguese, hello, excuse me, would you mind terribly help me with my bags? I'd love a table in your restaurant for 7 p.m. Thank you very much. It's very formal Portuguese she speaks. And they look
well,
at her
she's come
out of a time machine.
Well, she's passed that on to you, which, you know, you're...
I'm very well spoken.
You are very well spoken. Very nice.
I'm like Joanna Lumley.
Do the mountain Spanish speak with
the
that
mountain
accent?
Spanish.
Because there's less oxygen in the mountains, so their throats are more kind of constricted.
Constricted. I think it's actually because there's more flies, so you keep your mouth shut. It's the same. They say that's where the Australian accent came from, is that it's like East End British going over to Australia and then just shutting their mouth a bit because they don't want to get flies in it. That's what they decided.
But most Brits that went to Australia were from Ireland. They were convicts.
Well, let's see. Let's see if it works with an Irish accent. Apologies. Oh, I love it here in Australia. I don't know if... No, it doesn't really work so much. No, it doesn't work.
I know what happened. It was the interbreeding of the East Ender and the Irish. So if we try and merge our accents, we might come up with Australia. Which one do you want to be?
Well, I can be either because I'm very talented.
You are very talented. I'll be
creepy.
I'm a Londoner. Yeah, I'll be a Londoner. Yeah, welcome to Alice Springs. How you doing?
Oh, I love Alice Springs.
Copper.
That's
copper.
Right. I'm a copper. You look lovely.
You're
today.
A copper.
I'm
doing a runner because I'm from the East End, where we're all criminals.
That's right. Everyone there is a criminal in the East End. I am a very successful human.
That sounded like something that Bob Geldof might actually have said in public. I am a very successful human.
Bob. Oh, Bob.
We've drifted from refugees.
We have drifted, rather.
But we have of course, gone abroad, which is...
Yes. Maybe we could talk about something abroadish, about nature.
Nature. Okay.
Well, Lush loves nature.
I think that's something we both probably agree on as being a good thing.
Oh, I love nature.
Support nature.
I love trees, I love plants, I love grass, I love flowers, I love the earth, I love air. That's all nature, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Nature, of course, is the opposite of nurture.
Is it the opposite of nurture?
Yes.
Or just the word that often comes along with?
Well, technically, what is the opposite of nature?
Nurture.
Technology?
Because... Nature.
Industry.
But you're talking about a different kind of nature, aren't you? The nature of something rather than nature like trees and birds.
Is that what you're reading it as?
That's what
I thought.
Do you mean like the nature?
The origin, the source, the inner...
Oh, no, we don't want to talk about that.
I thought we were talking about the earth, the environment.
I thought we were talking about things like lemongrass, what they put in their soaps and that. Put some lemongrass in it, it'll make it smell nice. It's very, very popular at the moment, lemongrass. We have a bottle of lemongrass oil in our bath.
Your Portuguese mother.
Me and my Portuguese mum, we have a bath together. Me and mum put lemongrass in the bath.
I'm so pleased you still bathe together.
It's so cute.
When you were little, you know.
We've got some great photos of the whole family in the bath. Me and my mum and dad are the three kids. There's now four of us. But
you
one
still
of them
live
surprised.
As a toddler, even in your old, even today.
That's right.
Does she wipe your mouth? Does she buy your clothes?
No, she doesn't, sadly. Although I did go through some shops with her yesterday and said things like, that's nice, with the hope she would help. But She seems to think I'm a self-sufficient woman these days.
Tell me something, and this is a big one.
Yes.
Okay.
Tell me, I'm ready to hear.
We're proud of humanity and being human and what we all share as humans. We celebrate that. Creativity, compassion, love, abstract thought. And we love nature. It's beautiful, it's inspiring. Sometimes it has the same effect, a transcendent effect, like poetry, like music, but it's not man-made or human-made, I should say. And yet part of me thinks that human beings and nature are doomed to clash. The way the human stewards of the planet have operated is it could have been oh so much better. Are we nature's most unfortunate offspring?
It's very deep.
I know, it's very pessimistic too. So, change my mind. Can we improve nature, or will we always be?
I think we should go back to everyone just gets a plot of land and a little shack, and we all just live happily ever after.
When you say we go back to that, that's suggesting that on stage we were all just spread out in the world in our little shacks with
sharing
a plot of land each.
I think we should.
You watch Little House on the Prairie, didn't
That's
you?
That's right. Yeah. I think we could appreciate nature more and be less scared of being disconnected. I think we're too connected now with each other, and that's what's causing progress has got too far. We need less progress. We need to go backwards. I feel like we should all get rid of all the computers. But of course, then we'd be out of a job.
We wouldn't
be doing this job if we didn't have technology.
Why do you say that? What is our job anyway?
What, doing a podcast right now?
Well,
we would do the same thing
in front of a crowd of 1,000 people. People would still access our creativity. We would always find ways of access creativity without technology. With troubadours, and there were minstrels, and there were mummers, and shades, and all those old-fashioned words for whatever. And there was the oral tradition. I mean, Homer's Odyssey was never written down. Eventually it was written down because I read it. So it clearly was written down. But we had the oral tradition,
and they're being lost. But actually, interestingly, is that songs, because of technology, songs have been able to become more complex. So actually the old oral tradition meant that there was a lot more simplicity in our text. So because people could share it. So you'd have songs that just went, I'm in a field, I love my field. Oh, the field, here we are. Everybody, the field. Yeah. So, and they'd be simple so that people could share them. And so they're allowing us to write them down and record them, make podcasts, make TV programs. You know, if you look at television now compared to when television started, the creativity that's come out of that is incredible.
So maybe we're not saying that technology is the enemy of nature or humans is the enemy of nature. After all, technology comes from the natural world. Every component is sourced from the natural world. It's not like there's another sort of place. Are you auditioning to be
the next David Attenborough?
Grab these.
Is that what this is? I feel like you could put in post some music under your monologues. So I'm like, in the future.
Maybe you could sing a simple song under my monologues.
Monologue,
to elevate them.
Here's a monologue, another monologue.
The future of humans and nature is one of a marriage between the earth and earth's greatest creation.
He's still doing a monologue. Come on along.
Hand in hand.
He hasn't finished.
The future is ours to share. Not in enmity like West Ham versus Millwall, but in partnership like yin and yang, like custard and cream, like sorbet and vodka.
Go. Yeah. There it is. That's the future.
That was lovely.
Yeah, I felt that was quite poetic.
Do you agree with me?
I don't know what you said.
No.
I was too busy singing my monologue song.
And, perhaps we should... Oh, we're running out of time. Perhaps we should...
5 minutes.
Before we leave. We heard a little... We heard a little sort of promo piece earlier, didn't we, about self-care. So maybe a little poem about nature.
Oh, yes.
About humans and nature and how we can help each other not be in mortal combat.
Stood on mountains high, surveying the ground.
I feel when here, released, unbound. In freedom I walk the valleys and dales.
I walk around, my hands all flail, as I wish and wonder at this awesome world.
Into which I was born like a stone hurled. What is my place beside these mountain ranges?
It's full of fun and also dangers. And so I wonder, will the earth survive?
And are there too many people? Should we limit at 5? One per inhabited continent, I note.
And each one of them may own one goat. And so they will live on a homestead fine.
And live on goat's milk and from the grapes wine. And feed on nature's bounty like bread.
And live on until verily they are dead. And no humans will be left on earth.
Until once more the first woman and man it does give birth. For we are in a cycle of reincarnation.
That is the secret to our future nation. And it shall be painted with beauty and brush.
Oh, and I really ought to give a shout out to my friends at Lush.
Yay!
Sounds Right with Luke Sauber and Pippa Evans. Thank you very much for listening. For more information on our hosts, please go to pippaevans.com and lukesauber.com. Pippa is also on Twitter at @IamPippaEvans and Luke is at Luke Labour. If you'd like to hear more from Lush, and our ever-growing archive contains interviews, debates and stories with a wide range of charities, organisations and individuals, please download the free Lush Player app, which is available for both Android and Apple.